For those of you who don't speak French, this is a bulletin from Burkina Faso from last month, and it says, epidemiological surveillance documents no cases of serogroup A meningococcal disease in Burkina Faso this year. So this morning, I'm going to tell you the story of this remarkable achievement, what has taken place so far, and what's left to do. This is the African meningitis belt. It includes 430 million people at exquisitely high risk for meningococcal disease. And it's identified based on a certain longitude and latitude, but more it's identified based on a very specific pattern of meningococcal disease. These countries in the meningitis belt experience annual peaks of meningococcal disease. It occurs every year during the dry season, and then it sort of remarkably melts away every time it rains. On top of these seasonal peaks of disease, there are major epidemics that occur every 8 to 12 years. And this is just some of the epidemics, 1970 to 1996, just to give you an idea of the magnitude of these cases. Now, to put this in context, you know, in the United States, we consider an outbreak of meningococcal disease to be 2 to 3 cases. In the African meningitis belt, some districts have attack rates as high as 1%. So these are really epidemics of startling magnitude. But even on non-epidemic years, there's an incredible magnitude. So these peaks of disease that we call them, anywhere else would actually be called outbreaks. This is data from 2003 to 2005. And I want you to especially notice Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, which will come into my talk later. Every year in these countries, there are hundreds or thousands of cases of meningococcal disease. Like in the United States, roughly a quarter of these patients either die or have long-term sequelae, mental retardation, hearing loss, or loss of limbs. So there's incredible morbidity and mortality associated with meningococcal disease, but that's really magnified by the context. These are some of the poorest countries in the world, and so this is a study evaluating the economic impact of epidemic meningitis in Burkina Faso. They calculated that the cost to a household of a case of meningococcal disease is about $90. But you have to understand that this is 34% of the per capita GDP, and it's an additional $154 if sequelae occur. An outbreak in 2006 and 2007, which was a moderate-sized outbreak, not a massive one, cost $7.1 million. 85% of that was to pay for vaccination. That's 2% of the national health expenditure in these countries. So a major cause of morbidity and mortality, but also a major disruption to these fragile economies. Just a few slides about the basic epidemiology of meningococcal disease in the meningitis belt. This is sort of a little bit older data, 1981 to 1994. It's population-based surveillance, so that we can look at the age group distribution of rates of meningococcal disease. And what I want you to notice here is that it's actually not just a disease of childhood. Rates of meningococcal disease remain elevated really through age 20. When you think of prevention strategies, therefore, you really have to think broadly about how to impact disease, not just an infant immunization program. Meningococci are classified based on their capsular polysaccharide into serogroups. So in the United States, most diseases serogroups B, C, and Y. In Europe, most diseases serogroups B and C. Africa is relatively unique because the vast majority of disease there is serogroup A. There have been outbreaks of serogroup W135 and serogroup X over the past 10 years. But if you look at the magnitude of serogroup A disease compared to these relatively modest-sized outbreaks that occur infrequently, the vast majority of disease is still A, and that is the target group for vaccine and prevention strategies in the meningitis belt. So up until recently, we had one tool for control of meningococcal disease, and that's a polysaccharide vaccine. Polysaccharide vaccines work pretty well in the short term in older children and adults, but the problem is that they don't work well in young children. They also don't lead to a booster response, don't induce memory, so they don't provide long-term protection. And importantly, they don't impact carriage. Therefore, you're not interrupting transmission. You're not getting herd immunity. The What we've been holding out for, I don't know, 20 or 30 years, has been conjugate meningococcal vaccines. Based on what we've known from Haemophilus influenza B vaccines and pneumococcal vaccines, conjugate meningococcal vaccines have kind of been the holy grail, supposed to solve all our problems. Conjugate vaccines in general work well, not just in adults, but in infants. They induce memory and therefore presumably will provide long-term protection. And importantly, they interrupt transmission by eliminating carriage. But this is the view from around 2000. There had been several field studies of serogroup A containing conjugate vaccines in Gambia and Niger, and the vaccines worked reasonably well. There were ongoing studies on serogroup A containing vaccines in Europe and the United States. The problem is that the progress on these vaccines and the timelines were slow. And this is understandably because the major pharmaceutical companies did not see the sub-Saharan African meningitis belt as a major market. Their focus was on making vaccines for industrialized countries. That really changed in 2001 with the availability of new funds. And that led to the launch of the Meningococcal Vaccine Project, or MVP. This is a partnership between the World Health Organization and PATH, and funded initially with the grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for $70 million, which at the time was an amazing sum of money in 2001. This is really a unique activity because it's a manufacturing consortium, not a manufacturer. And so there have been a variety of groups of manufacturers that have come together to make the vaccine. The polysaccharide itself comes from Cinco Biopartners in Amsterdam. The tetanus toxoid comes from Staten Serum Institute in Denmark. The FDA actually invented the conjugation methodology that allows you to link those two things together. And the vaccine itself is produced at the Serum Institute of India for a relatively remarkable cost of 40 cents a dose. It's a startlingly low number for a vaccine that really is being used for the first time in Africa. Now, the strategy for use of this vaccine is actually also slightly unique. These are some modeling studies that we did in the early part of this endeavor to show that because of the broad age distribution of meningococcal disease, an infant immunization program would actually not get you much. And so the gray bar is supposed to show you the rough current burden of meningococcal disease, and the blue bar is what you'd get with routine infant immunization. You protect children, but you wouldn't really impact disease. Your major effect of disease is these red and yellow bars at the end, which is what you get when you do mass immunization by massively immunizing 1 to 29-year-olds, eliminating colonization, interrupting transmission. You get herd immunity, and that's really where you see the major benefit of the conjugate vaccines in this context. And that, indeed, is the strategy that the MVP has taken. Mark LaForce, who's the lead for the MVP project, was at this meeting last year talking about the vaccine, and I'm just going to tell you about the progress since that time. The vaccine is called Menafervac. There's a picture of that in the corner. And since last year, there's been a lot of additional safety data that's been generated. So all told, about 7,000 adults and children have gotten the vaccine in India and Africa with a good safety profile. The vaccine was licensed in December 2009 in India by the National Regulatory Authority, and then it was pre-qualified by WHO in June in 2010. Another thing that's pretty different about this vaccine, a lot of vaccines, most vaccines, are used first in the industrialized world where there's a whole bunch of data generated and then sort of secondly moved out to developing countries. This vaccine is unique. There are similar vaccines used in the in the industrialized world, but really the first use of the vaccine is in Africa. So it is really important that we look carefully at the immunogenicity to make sure that it's working as a true conjugate should. I'm just going to show you one piece of data, not to belabor this fact, but this is an immunogenicity slide comparing the conjugate vaccine, which is the PSATT vaccine, compared to the polysaccharide vaccine, which is the PSACYW vaccine. And in older, in adolescents and adults, the vaccines look pretty similar. That's because in adolescents and adults, polysaccharide vaccine immunogenicity is pretty good. Where you can see the dramatic difference is in the 2 to 10-year-olds. That kind of orangish bar is the conjugate vaccine, and the blue bar is the polysaccharide vaccine. And this much improved immunogenicity is sort of characteristic of conjugate vaccines. And this and other immunogenicity data is why we believe this vaccine is acting as a true conjugate vaccine and is going to have the properties that I went through earlier. The introduction strategy, the first three countries to introduce are Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. And if you remember the slide that I showed you earlier, those are countries that year in and year out have substantial burden of disease. There are three phases to this introduction. In September of 2010, there was introduction in a limited population, about 400,000 doses in each country, to look for adverse events and to address some of the logistical constraints of using a vaccine for the first time. In December 2010, the entire country of Burkina Faso was targeted for vaccination. That's 11 million people, and 4 million people each in Mali and Niger. And then phase three is to occur in the fourth quarter of this year with the rest of the populations of Mali and Niger vaccinated. This is sort of a typical picture, a nice child being vaccinated. He looks a little upset, but he's sort of dealing with it okay. This is to show you that what's a little unique is that after the child got vaccinated, his mom got vaccinated, because we really are vaccinating everybody in this broad age group. I know there's a lot of discussion at this meeting about vaccine hesitancy. In the African meningitis belt, people are very aware of meningococcal disease and its consequences. And so vaccine hesitancy is not an issue. These are people clamoring to get the vaccine. And consistent with that are these numbers. In 10 days, 11 million people in Burkina Faso were vaccinated. That's the entire population. And the target populations of Mali and Niger had equally high coverage rates. Just a quick slide to show you that the adverse event data looks as expected. There's lots of mild adverse events, sore arms and such, some severe adverse events, but pretty much nothing untold and nothing unexpected. Now, I think Anne's probably favorite part of this presentation. I'm going to tell you about the early data on impact. So I'm going to show you this data in a couple different ways, but as a starting place, this is meningitis surveillance data from Burkina Faso, and for the past 4 years, with the green line being this year. And you can see that the green line is lower than all the other lines, and also the trajectory of that line is horizontal. Another way to look at this is by district-level attack rates, and so this is also data from Burkina Faso. The red districts are those that are in epidemic. The yellow have a slightly lower attack rate in alert. I don't have the 2011 data. As you can imagine, this data is really just rolling off the presses, but I've seen it, and basically in the entire country, there's only one district that has even an alert threshold passed. Yet another way. So this is basically a typical year of data in Burkina Faso, where 90% of the bacterial meningitis cases are serogroup A. This is this year. It's all strep pneumo. And I showed you that slide early on about no cases of meningitis. That was a month ago. So as of today, there have actually been two cases of confirmed serogroup A meningococcal disease in unvaccinated adolescents in Burkina Faso. It's really a remarkable number. So I'm going to say it again, two. And data looks similarly impactful from Niger. I'm really excited, but epidemics in meningitis, the peaks of the disease move around a bit. And so this is last year, the dotted line, and they had a late peak. And then the black line is the current year. You can see the trajectory is really different, but I think I will feel much more comfortable after another 4 or 6 weeks passed and we don't have a late peak of disease. So I was struggling the past week or so to try and find a cartoon that epitomized where I thought we were. So this is my try at this. It's a Zen saying. When you get to the top of the mountain, keep on climbing. I'm incredibly excited about the vaccine, but I think it's really important that we not forget that there's a lot left to do. So this vaccine was licensed based on safety and immunogenicity. That's not a lot of data. Clearly, there's a lot more data that we'd like to have to understand how this vaccine will work. And importantly, I've underlined, this whole enterprise is predicated on ability to generate herd immunity and impact transmission. We really need to be able to better understand and measure the indirect impact of vaccination. stopping epidemics even for a few years would be great, but the goal here is to end epidemics, and so we really need to have the surveillance in place to be able to look for duration of protection. Finally, there's this graph. So we've so far basically have plans to vaccinate these three countries, which is great, but this is the epidemic meningitis belt. It's a lot bigger than that. There are a number of challenges. There certainly are logistic challenges being able to roll out vaccination across these very complicated and poor countries. And then there are also the financial challenges of trying to raise enough funds for this whole endeavor. So I would judge me at this point cautiously optimistic, but you know, not secure. I think there's still a lot of work to do. It has taken a whole host of individuals and organizations to get to this point, and I'm really proud that CDC has had a role in it, an important role in it. This is at least part of the CDC meningitis team, and I'd like to close by thanking them for their hard work, their commitment, their dedication. Together, we really can end epidemic meningitis in Africa. Thank you.